What is up, guys? This is Tyler Babin, and welcome to Tuesday Morning Coffee. This is episode 4, and we're doing things a little bit different today. This is not a normal episode. I don't have a guest on today. This is a solo Ask Me Anything type of episode. A couple days ago, I jumped on Instagram, asked you guys to throw some questions my way. I wanted to do something that was very long form, where I could really go deep into some of these questions you guys have been asking me lately. And so that is what this episode is all about. We'll be back to regularly scheduled guest episodes next week. But for now, it's just you and I. We're gonna dig through some questions and chat for a bit. One little piece of a forewarning I want to give you guys. If you don't know, I live in the middle of Midtown Manhattan, right near the Lincoln Tunnel, and I'm recording this at 4:50 p.m., which means over the next 30 to 45 minutes, there will probably be an enormous amount of horns and cars going through the tunnel. So if there's any background noise, I apologize. Forgive me this week. Hopefully it won't be too bad, but just wanted to put that on your radar. So we're going to dig in right away, and I'm just going to go for about an hour. I'm going to answer as many of these questions as I can and expand on things. As always, if I don't get to your question or you have other questions for me, my inbox on Instagram and my email is always open. But diving into this, our first question is from iFightFood on Instagram, and he asked, what would 16-year-old Babin say to Babin now? And you know what's funny? I was thinking about this, and someone asked me a similar question the other day. It's tough to say because, for one, I think definitely the 16-year-old version of myself was pretty small-minded, like didn't think he was going to do that much. But like further, I've always been pretty okay with taking like big risks. And then recently, I guess, in my life, you know, the more you kind of gain and accomplish, you become a little bit more scared of taking risks, obviously, because there's way more to lose. So I feel like the 16-year-old version of myself would tell me to be far more risk-based and take more shots in the dark. I think that would be kind of an interesting thing. And then if I was giving advice to my 16-year-old self, I would say, think way, way bigger than the little town you find yourself in right now. Yeah. Next question is from Javon, and he asked me, what are 3 skills a beginning videographer should master? He gave the examples of color grading, filming techniques, editing software, and composition. So normally I kind of am a little scared of questions like this because I am terrified to give 3, you know, hard and fast rules of what I think it takes to be a videographer or to do anything in the creator world. Because there's so many things you have to learn, and I don't want to say color grading, and then you put all of your energy into color grading. So I want to say, like, yes, you should become as well-rounded in as many different things as you can, but first and foremost is understanding what you're trying to say and understanding how to tell a story that makes sense for you. Because unfortunately, color grading, filming techniques, the software I use, the composition, things like that, none of that really matters if I'm not telling a good story. And I think it sounds kind of cliche, and maybe I'm like, my old age is coming to me at this point, but I really, really, you know, genuinely believe that story needs to be the first thing you're thinking about and prioritized at the highest level, because that's just the thing that really is going to set yourself apart. You know, nowadays, like, everyone's obsessed with like fancy editing techniques and thinking that there's a one size fits all to be like a successful creative or whatever it is. But there's so many things. And I think that if you don't have an original, unique way to tell the stories you want to tell, you're not going to last as long as what you could. Next question from This is Travis. And he asked, what's the biggest misconception about yourself? No question. The biggest thing that I think is a misconception about myself is a lot of people assume, based off whether it be Instagram or I don't even know, that my life 24/7 is kind of running around and I'm constantly shooting, or I'm in a helicopter flying somewhere. And, you know, like, I understand from the perspective of like Instagram and YouTube, it can feel that way. The thing that I think would surprise people is how boring my life is, like 90% of the time. You know, it's Monday afternoon that I'm recording this, but for the last week and a half, I've literally left my apartment, you know, probably less than 5 times. I mean, I've been working on an edit for the Jeff Staple episode of Tuesday Morning Coffee that has just taken all of my time. And I think people would be surprised to know how much time has actually just been sitting at a desk, clicking a mouse away, you know, for just an unbelievable amount of hours. And it's honestly the thing that I think scares me so much about content creation and you know, this creator pedestal that we sort of find ourselves in. It's similar to the thing around entrepreneurship that Gary always preached is for, you know, the bulk of his career, it wasn't sexy to be an entrepreneur. And now it's like cool and everyone wants to say they're a creator. I think it's sort of similar. You know, whenever I was in high school making videos about magic tricks, I pretty much sat like alone by myself in my school computer lab every lunch for, you know, my entire like 11th and 12th grade year. You know, it wasn't like the cool guy thing to do. And now based off, you know, Instagram and social, everyone wants to be a photographer or a videographer, a filmmaker, whatever it may be. But you have to understand that the only way to actually get things done is to get them done. There's this great book, I think it's called Steal Like an Artist. And one of the rules of like creativity is like, you kind of have to be boring. A lot of my life is boring. And sure, it has its cool moments, but you would be really surprised to know how much time is actually just spent on a computer, not being super active and running around. Next question from Yusef Jazz. I hope I didn't butcher that username, but how would you say magic and cardistry have influenced your creative journey? And I'll take one step backwards. If you're not a super deep fan and follow everything I'm putting out, you may not know that the whole thing that got me into you know, being a creative for the most part was I started out as a magician. Whenever I was growing up in Florida, I was obsessed with cards and sleight of hand, and I still am, frankly. I am a little bit more of like a card collector these days and am doing a lot of stuff, you know, just kind of like privately. I'm always sort of like fidgeting with a deck of cards at my desk, and it's one of my biggest passions. You know, unknowingly, my entire career, for the most part, was all based off me picking up a deck of cards, though. And it sounds funny to say that now, but the entire process of me learning how to make videos started by me making videos of myself doing magic tricks. And it's, you know, it's funny because it wasn't even originally for YouTube. I started posting on YouTube in like 2008, I think, was the first video I ever put up. If you search Tyler Babin Magic on YouTube, you'll find my first YouTube channel, which was all about magic tricks. And it's, you know, painful and very cringeworthy to look at now. But, you know, if you want to go entertain yourself, that's where it is. You know, and I built my entire sort of foundation as a creative around magic and cardistry. And so it's funny because I really, I don't want to say I hid that about my life for the last few years, but it wasn't something that I made very public. And now I'm slowly starting to rework that back into the content I'm putting out now, and I'm having a lot of fun with it. So I would say it had a pretty, pretty substantial impact on my life. Next question is, what's your take on the importance of location as a content creator specifically in my case? So as I'm sure probably a lot of you know, I live in New York City. However, I spend also a lot of time in places like Los Angeles and really kind of all over the country. Like there's no doubt in my mind, being in a big market where lots of content creation is happening, you know, putting yourself in the positions of New York and LA is very much going to have in a lot of situations a positive impact on your creative career. Like there's no doubt in my mind that that is a real thing. But the cool thing is you don't have to be in any of these places. I mean, some of the biggest YouTubers on the platform right now are, you know, family vloggers in middle America that, you know, never come to New York or LA. A bad habit I had whenever I was growing up in Florida was I blamed my location on everything. I said, I can't do the things I want to do because I'm not there. And in some level, I was right. It was really difficult to make a living as a fashion photographer in a very tiny town, which is how I sort of originally started. I needed to be in a bigger market. And now that I have lived for a number of years in a big market, I don't think I'll ever leave and go to a smaller market now. But don't you know, if you're in a situation where you're stuck in a smaller town or you're not in as big of a market, don't think that game is over for you. The ability to like have the internet and kind of do whatever you want, you know, makes a huge impact and you'll be able to really go out and do things. So yes, there's going to be a ton of positive benefits that come with going to a bigger market, but don't think that you're out in the cold if you live in Nebraska. You don't have to be in a prime market to make it as a creative these days. Next question. Oh, this is a good one. Seller's Mile Team. Hopefully that's right. And he said, aesthetic versus message, what's more important in what you create? And this is a hot topic right now. I've been getting this question a lot recently, and it's sort of this balance of I've really been pushing for transparency in everything I'm putting out and being very honest with how I'm doing the work I'm doing, what sort of comes along with that. And it's tough because, of course, as a creator who I'm falling very in line, I think, with being sort of a lifestyle creator, that unknowingly I'm sort of slipping into like luxury lifestyle in a few like weird ways. And I'm noticing that it's like popping up a little bit in the content I'm putting out. And it's something that I'm being very conscious about. You know, a few weeks ago, I went to Vegas for a few days to shoot a project with this exotic car rental company. And I got to take this like cool photo out in the desert with a Ferrari. And that, you know, looks awesome because it's a cool car and it's a cool location and all that. But I'm terrified that people are going to think that is what a normal day in my life looks like. Kind of circling back to the biggest kind of misconception is those sort of days are few and far between. And so something I think that's been on my mind lately is always remembering that message is the most important thing, and that's what's going to be at the root of whatever you're doing. You can dress up whatever you're working on in a fancy way, no matter what it is. Like, you can figure out a way to make it look sexy, but you can't do the reverse. You can't just like take a picture of something that's super sexy and make it so that there's a deep message behind it. It's kind of a one-way street. And so I'm always thinking first and foremost with message, and then how can I take the message I want to tell in a transparent way and make it as visually appealing in the world we live in now, which, you know, it's important that things look good on Instagram and my website and things like that. I can't ignore that that's a real factor that I need to keep in mind. But I never, you know, if I ever kind of look at myself in the mirror and feel like I'm creating things that don't have a meaning behind them and don't have a real purpose, then I think I'm messing up in a pretty massive way. Question from Hayes Ice Cream. And he says, what does success look like for Babin? You know, it's funny. I've been thinking about this a little bit more recently, and I've always answered that I just wanted to be happy and I just wanted to wake up every day and make things that I was happy making. And then something that I've learned in the process of leaving my job at Vayner and going into the creative residency is I was happy making work at Vayner. Like, I loved everyone that I worked with there. I enjoyed the work, and there were very few days where I like was not excited to go into work. But the thing I really realized was I wasn't fulfilled at all by the work that I was doing there. As much as I was happy in the process of making it, when I left every day, I felt a little bit empty inside. And so now success to me is being just completely content and satisfied with the type of work I'm making. Like, I really, really need to be fulfilled and feel like I'm making something that only I can make, and that I'm making it for a specific purpose. And that's different for everyone. And I don't want to dig into the specifics of, you know, my message and my ultimate sort of goals and the legacy I'm working towards, but making sure that I'm positioning myself in a place that I have the freedom to make work that fulfills me and I don't have to give up sort of who I am is what I think success looks like nowadays. Question from Ivan, and he says, what inspires your creativity? Ivan, I have some bad news for you. As much as it may look like I have a lot of creative ideas and things like that, and I do label myself as a creative, I would say, you know, a large majority of the time I feel very uncreative. You know, if you talk to the people that are like really close to me in my life, you'd know that that's the biggest struggle I deal with, is that a majority of the time I kind of feel like a fraud. Like, I don't feel like I'm the most creative person. I do, however, think I'm willing to work a lot harder than a lot of creatives around me. And so, and what I think I lack in creativity, I make up for in work ethic and continuing to try and push things out. But that being said, if I did have to pick something specifically that inspires my creativity, it's going to be music. Like, music is kind of everything for me. It's where so many ideas sort of spike from. And it's, you know, there's been tons of projects throughout my career that have all been based off of specific albums or specific songs or artists or things like that. That's where I really, really pull a lot of stuff from. We have a question from Luca. What's been your favorite project you've done, past or present? My favorite project was probably, well, actually, I will, you know, hinder this. Because of when I'm recording this episode, I know that there's a very likely chance this episode will be released before my new episode of 24 Hours With, featuring Jeff Staple. That video that will be coming out in the next day or two, and frankly might be coming out a few hours after this podcast is uploaded if approvals come through at the right time, is no question, I think, my favorite video I've ever made for a number of different reasons, and I'm doing a full sort of like dissect on why that video means so much to me. But if I'm looking into the past, it would be the first K-Swiss campaign I shot. So this is sort of like a weird side project. A lot of people know that Gary has done a number of shoes with K-Swiss. But before Gary's actual shoes came out, a project we did at Vayner was we shot a campaign for just a random line of shoes K-Swiss was putting out. It was their summer line. And I was able to shoot and direct the entire campaign basically completely by myself, which in retrospect, giving a at the time 23-year-old photographer full rein to just do whatever he wanted on a project was a pretty crazy experience to go through. And I really, really love and respect Gary and K-Swiss and everyone for believing in me enough to pull that project together. Funny enough, like I ran into a ton of problems because it was the first time I had like directed a project of that scale. We were, you know, paying $10,000 a day for locations and shooting celebrities. And it was just the first time I'd been in a situation like that. But it was no question one of my favorite experiences. And I guess it really all ties back to sort of an obsession with putting yourself outside of your comfort zone. Like, I always sort of encourage different creatives to push into doing projects that might feel like you're not quite there yet, like it would be a struggle for you, because that's where I think the most growth happens. And for me, that was the first K-Swiss project. Putting yourself in a point where I was in LA with, you know, I only had one other person with me, Andy Kay from Team Gary, who was like helping me direct the whole thing. It was just wild, wild experience. But that was probably one of my favorites. Second to that, I would say maybe designing the Crushing It book cover, just because of there was something about Gary had texted me like really late one night asking me if I wanted to design the cover for Crushing It. And I said, yes. And then literally the next day I like went into the office, like hacked a design together, went through some back and forth with the publisher. And then that book ended up closing out at number one on the New York Times bestseller for its category. And going from just like a text message to the next day, like building something in Photoshop and then seeing and knowing that book and that design is in like hundreds of thousands of like homes and hands every day is really, really exciting. We've got a question from Andrew, and Andrew asks, what questions do I ask myself before starting a project to get the creative juices going and make sure you're heading in the right direction? I like this question because it's something I've been thinking about a little bit more consciously recently, that I need to be considering the creative projects I'm taking on a lot more than what I have been for the bulk of my career up to this point. And what I mean by that is I default into saying yes in almost every situation. So no matter what, like if a project comes down the pipeline, there's a good chance I'm gonna wanna say yes to it just due to like FOMO, like the fear of missing out. And what if, you know, what experience could happen with that project? I have a bad habit of saying yes all the time. What I've sort of taken a step back to realize is that I need to ask myself if I'm just scared of missing out on a project that would be potentially a good press piece versus something that actually would make me happy and I'm gonna be excited to work on. And so if a project comes down the pipeline and there's anything else that seems more enticing to work on, even if it's less money or less praise or whatever it may be, I'm getting better at saying no to the project. I always want to make sure that it's accomplishing a couple different goals, whether it gives me the ability to travel, whether it's, you know, just financially, like really, really worth the investment, or if it's, you know, a critical piece in my portfolio that I think will level me up as a creative, not only in my actual skill set, but in the way people see me. And so what I mean by that is, like, you know, I'm the first person to say that, you know, if tomorrow Apple calls and says they want me to direct a project, but I have to do it for free, I'm 1000% going to say yes, because then I get to put Apple on my resume. And I think that just goes a really, really long way. So those are kind of the questions I ask myself to make sure that I'm not making a bad decision. But I'm also, you know, super honest that there's been tons of projects recently. And I'm talking like within the last couple of weeks that I've said yes to, that halfway through the project, I realized I had made a mistake and I wasn't enjoying working on it. So I'm trying to be far more strict on those questions, because it's just so, so, so important. Question from my man, Bobby, who has an amazing, amazing podcast. If you like the way Tuesday Morning Coffee is going, you'll love what he's done. And he's built out a massive library of creative content, entrepreneurship-based episodes. His show is called The Purpose and the Youth Podcast. I will try and remember to link this down in the show notes, and it'll have a direct link over to his podcast. Amazing, amazing guy. I've been on his show twice. He asked, if I could never pick up a camera again, what would I focus on next? And it ironically, the thing I would focus on next is sitting on my desk, you know, within eyesight, and that would be music production. I'm obsessed with wanting to learn how to produce music. It's been something that I've wanted to tackle for a long time. I have all of the music production software that I could need to do the thing. I just have not made it as high of a priority, but it's something I definitely want to attack more of. And like I said earlier, with where my kind of creativity and ideas come from, it all sparks from music. And so there's so often that I'll be working visually on a thing and I feel like I know how the music should sound, I just can't find it. My ultimate goal in my filmmaking video creation career would be if I could make a video and then also score the video and create all the music that goes alongside of it. There's a really amazing filmmaker I look up to. His name's Tim Kellner. Search for him on YouTube, and that's what he does. He is a filmmaker, but also creates all the music that goes behind it. And it's just, you can tell whenever music and video have been thought of in the same process together, because everything flows so much more seamlessly and it feels like one cohesive piece. And so that would be the thing. If I couldn't pick up a camera again tomorrow, I am 100% picking up an MPC beat pad, and I'm just going to go to town and Logic and figure out how to make beats as fast as I possibly can. Question from Kyle. He said, any tips on staying consistent with content? The thing I think I've realized recently is how important it is. You know, I said earlier, the being boring, like I kind of hate it because my brain is very ADD and I'm sort of bouncing all over the walls 24/7. But taking really, really good care of my calendar and structuring my schedule with what I want to get done. I have like reminders on my calendar reminding me what days I have to post what things on Instagram and Twitter and YouTube and things like that. Having those reminders that are kind of like right in your face are super, super important. And also being as organized as you can with those ideas. So, you know, spending an hour a day thinking up ideas, which is something I haven't gotten to the point where I'm spending a full hour a day on it yet. But a couple months ago, I was in LA and I had lunch with my friend Zach, who's the manager for Yes Theory. And I got to spend some time. I went and visited the Yes House and met all the guys on Yes Theory. And every week they have, you know, a big brainstorm where everyone comes to the table and for an hour, all they do is sit down and think about ideas and try and structure out what they want to make. And he sort of gave me that piece of advice that I should be spending probably closer to an hour a day at this point in my career thinking of ideas and trying to come up with creative storytelling ideas. But I think the thing with making anything consistent in life is just prioritizing it, that you want to be consistent. And if you want to be consistent and you put the effort in, then you will get it done. Kind of a weird follow-up as I'm scrolling down, like the very next question from Go for Brandon. He said, how do you not let procrastination get in the way? I will say I'm like a textbook procrastinator. I think I just realized that I have a very finite amount of time in the world to accomplish the things I want to accomplish, and that I have to prioritize the things that matter to me. So, you know, if tomorrow I get hit by a bus, I'm going to be pretty upset if all I did was play video games and I didn't record the podcast I'm recording right now. And it's all about priorities and knowing how badly you want to do the thing you're working towards. Because if you found the thing you like doing and you enjoy it, why wouldn't you want to do it all the time? A question from AmazingA23, and he said, what is the ultimate goal you're working towards? This is a question I see a lot, not only that it's getting asked of me, but I see other people asking people. You know, for me, I don't like the idea of an ultimate goal doesn't exist. I can't think, because in my mind, like, that's when it's game over. You know, like, I can't imagine anything that I would be working towards that once I accomplished it, I would be like, cool, I did it. I can stop doing the thing now. Like, goals are ever evolving and ever changing. And I don't think I'm ever going to be at a point where I want to stop creating and working on things. You know, so like for me, like the ultimate goal is just, you know, make more. You know, like I just never, I guess weirdly, if you want to say what my goal is to never achieve my goal. Like, I never want to know what an ultimate goal is because I never want to stop moving forward and never stop kind of like pushing. Every time, you know, it's funny because I remember like whenever I was leaving Florida, like I would always say like my goal is to move to New York. And then the second I moved to New York, like 12,000 other goals showed up that I wanted to accomplish. And every time I accomplish one of those, it's like I don't stop for a second. Like I don't really take time to breathe. Like I immediately know what the next thing I want to do is, you know, and that's the thing I realized is like if you're growing an Instagram account and you say your goal is to hit 10,000 followers, I promise you the day you hit 10,000 followers, you're going to be like, all right, cool, but I really want 20,000. And then you're going to hit 20,000. And the next day you're going to be like, well, I really want 30,000. And so I think, you know, making sure that you never get so locked into one goal that you forget to just like live your life. That's sort of, I guess, it, at my core, my thing is like, I just want to continue living my life until I get to the other side. Question from Josh. He said, what helps you stay motivated when you begin feeling unmotivated? I'm really big on not putting too much pressure on yourself. I think motivation is inherently internal. Sometimes I am super, super motivated and just want to work 24/7. Some days I'm just not feeling it. Like I'm just not creatively there. I think the important thing for me is I don't punish myself on the days that I don't feel hyper, hyper creative and motivated. Like if I need to take half a day off and just like kind of veg out and like, you know, watch Netflix, I'm okay with doing that. Like I don't think that's the end of the world. Those days are, you know, few and far between. And I think that's because when it comes to staying motivated, I've framed up my life for the most part so that I'm doing exactly what I want to do. So why wouldn't I be motivated to keep doing it every day? Like there's, you know, I can't think of the last time that I woke up and didn't want to come sit down at the computer and, you know, try some sort of creative idea. I think it all just comes down to wanting to do the thing you're doing. And that's why if, you know, to circle back again, you know, to what I had mentioned at the beginning of the podcast of like my fear that people are just doing creative things because of the fame and fruits that come with creative work at the moment, like that would be the only reason in my mind that you wouldn't be motivated to do the thing. And then it's at the core, you're doing it kind of for the wrong reasons. This is kind of an interesting story, and it's a story I haven't told yet. I'm looking at a question right now from surgicalcaps.com, and he said, how did you tell Gary Vee you were breaking up? That's kind of a funny way to phrase it, but I'm more than happy to talk about how Gary and I had that conversation. If you saw the video on YouTube of my last day at Vayner, you saw that Gary and I had a conversation, but there were a number of conversations leading up to that particular, you know, final conversation that, for context, if you don't know, the last 6 months of my time at Vayner, I was the creative director of Empathy Wines, which is Gary's winery. Gary and I were flying out to Napa Valley to taste the white wine and to kind of get Gary's final approval on things. At this point, I sort of knew that I was going to probably be taking the creative residency, and I knew that Gary and I were going to have an hour in traffic, and so that was sort of my prime opportunity. You know, I think he could sort of tell as soon as we got into the car. He's a very intuitive guy. As soon as we got in the car, he kind of asked if everything was okay, if there was anything I needed to talk about, because I'm sure I sort of like looked nervous and that I was about to, you know, for all intents and purposes, quit my job. And I just told him, and I said, you know, look, there's an opportunity that's come up that I think if I don't take now, I'm going to regret in the future. And that, you know, if I don't take it, I'm going to sort of wonder what if. And Gary, you know, obviously that's the amended version. We talked for a very long time, and we talked about different options of what I could do to both stay in Gary's world and what would happen if I left. And ultimately, we both sort of decided that the best thing for me to do in this moment was to walk away from Vayner for the time being and pursue some things that were sort of like in my head. And, you know, if you go back and watch that video, there's sort of a particular line. And, you know, he said, I'm excited for you. And I said, yeah, it feels like the right thing for right now. And he said, you know, I completely agree. It does feel like the right thing for right now. And I think that's at its core. Everyone, you know, there's a lot of people online that think Gary and I are never going to talk again. Like, Gary and I talk on a regular basis. We see each other on a semi-regular basis. And I'm sure we always will. And I super genuinely want to work with Gary again in the future in some capacity. No question. And we've made sure that was what it was. Like, he knew that I was just sort of going through a point where I needed to address the creative ideas that were floating around in my head, and that I was running out of runway in some sense. You know, going into like my late 20s of like, all right, like it's time to like really kind of take a stab at the things I want to make and see if, you know, it's doable. Luckily, Gary was very, you know, welcoming and open to it. And so kind of now we're off to the races, and he's been very supportive in my time since I left. And I'm sure he will continue to be supportive. And, you know, come next year, once I am no longer an Adobe Creative Resident, we will figure out some ways to work with each other again in the future. Next question is from Eric, and this is all about the creative residency. He said, how did I go about brainstorming ideas for the residency? How nervous was I to hear back from Adobe, and sort of what I gave in my year-long plan and why? And so, yeah, I'll give like a full sort of debrief on how I went about planning what I was going to pitch to Adobe for the residency, and how I sort of the whole process went. So in terms of brainstorming, like I have sort of a notebook that's always near me with a lot of video ideas. And I had been thinking about the concept for 24 Hours With for a long time. Originally, the concept was called Behind the Feed. So you guys may have heard me say Behind the Feed in a few pieces of content, but I rebranded it right before the launch to 24 Hours With because I felt like it fit my long-term goals a little bit more. So I knew that this was a project I wanted to dig into at some point. I wanted to essentially take all of the skills and ideas that I had learned documenting Gary for the 3.5 years that I did and apply that into a series in which I only spent one day with a person, and how much could I sort of learn and adapt and teach others about this person in one day. That was something that was like a really high priority for me. So I pitched the idea, sort of breaking down the storytelling techniques that I learned from Gary's world and how I was going to apply it to this new series. I ended up submitting my application literally the night before applications closed. And I went through sort of a big back and forth the day before on if I was even going to submit it. I kind of didn't think I had any real shot in getting selected. And so at the last minute, I was starting to kind of pull back a little bit and didn't think I was actually going to submit the application, but I did, and luckily it kind of worked out. In terms of like nerves, whenever I submitted the application, it was, I mean, on some level, yes, it was scary. I, you know, didn't know what they were going to say or if they were going to like the idea. But I'm never really devastated by rejection. So even if, you know, if Adobe would have said no, or they wouldn't have gotten back to me at all about the application, I don't think it would have been sort of a real career ending moment. Sure, I probably would have been upset for a day, but then gotten over it pretty quickly. You know, so originally that was kind of the thought. I didn't start getting, I guess, more nervous until it started becoming real. You know, the interview process for the residency is pretty intense. There's a lot of phone calls. There's, you know, lots of hours that are spent interviewing. And so after I had sort of invested all that time, that's when I started getting a little bit nervous that I might not end up receiving it. But even if that would have been the case, I think it sort of would have been a similar thing that, you know, probably would have been upset for a day. But you can't be devastated by rejection. Like, rejection's a part of life. And I think that the more comfortable you get with people saying no to you, the better, because then you you know, don't waste any time on dwelling over a missed opportunity. You get kind of like straight back to work and keep sort of grinding. Oh, I like this question from Brider. Brider, B-R-Y-D-E-R. I don't know. I'm pretty sure I'm dyslexic, so I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. But he asked, what's the favorite thing I do while stuff is rendering and exporting? And that cycles back to card magic. And so the real opportunity and time I get to like actively practice like sleight of hand and card stuff these days is while videos are exporting. So anytime things are rendering or exporting or I'm watching a tutorial or something like that, I normally am like messing with a deck of cards and trying to learn some sort of new technique. Question from Tortured Genius. If you could compare what you do at Adobe versus what I did at VaynerMedia, pros and cons of each, how you feel both of the roles have led to growth professionally and personally. So this is a good question, and I think it's a good comparison for knowing what sort of the in a lot of ways, even though obviously Adobe and Vayner are both pretty corporate companies, what it was like to work at both. At Vayner, I always had a kind of like direct managers that were helping me manage all the different projects I was working on. If there were a lot of things, and then there were, you know, pockets of my time at Vayner where I just had very specific to-do lists of, you know, whenever I was filming and editing Daily V, like that was sort of all I was doing, is my entire priority and work and life was revolving around filming and editing Daily V. And so there was always kind of an immediate to-do list. The biggest change is whenever I started the residency with Adobe is that all of a sudden I didn't have that anymore. I didn't have anyone helping me sort of navigate through certain tasks. And I was really surprised with how difficult I found the first couple months of the residency trying to really get content out on a regular basis and making sure that I felt confident in the ideas, because all of a sudden I was very, very solo in most situations. And obviously there are the other residents and I have mentors and things like that that I'm pulling into now. But those first couple months were really, really tough on just getting overall traction. And I kind of went into a bad phase of overthinking a lot. I also, you know, I had kind of the gift and a curse of I had a video go a bit viral whenever I left Vayner, like the video announcing that. All of a sudden, you know, my YouTube channel grew from 500 to over 20,000 subscribers in less than a week. And all of a sudden there was a lot of pressure to like really perform. And so that sort of held me back a lot early on. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think both jobs have pushed me an enormous amount professionally and personally. Vayner really got me out of my shell. I was always kind of a very naturally quiet kid. You can't do that as much. I was still a pretty quiet kid at Vayner, but I talked a lot more, really sort of found my voice and like how I talk and act and interact with people. And professionally, Vayner pushed me into a realm that I had never dealt with before of having to really, really perform at a high level and get in a massive amount of content out. The biggest thing professionally about my time at Adobe thus far has been, you know, getting a very up close and personal look at my, at the way I work and the things I'm good at and the things I'm bad at. It's also helped me really understand how to manage and schedule things as a solo creator, which is something that I normally hadn't done. And the thing I've realized that the biggest wall I can tend to run into is not knowing where files are or not being prepared for phone calls or whatever it may be. And so Adobe's definitely pushed me to learn a lot more about structure and timelines and organization and schedules and things like that, because all of a sudden no longer is my life only about creativity. I have to spend a lot of time actually, you know, planning the other half. Like it sounds strange to say it, even though like the creative residency is fully based around being creative and you know, building that life around creativity. But I would say, you know, only, you know, 40 or 50% of my time these days feels like I'm actually creating content. So much more of it is going into pre-production and meetings and phone calls and making sure that everything leading up to the moment of creating or a photo shoot or video shoot is all put in place. Question from Ian. He asked me, what's my favorite movie and why? My favorite movie is Whiplash, starring Miles Teller and I believe R.J. Simmons. Is that his name? I don't know. He's the bald guy. That's my favorite movie. Both the overall sort of visual approach. I think the director, it was directed by the same guy who directed La La Land, which is my second favorite movie. I just love like the visual approach. But I also very much relate to the story of Whiplash, which I don't want to spoil it too much, but it's about a jazz drummer in college going through the process of trying to become the best that he can be. And it's something I think I just kind of like very, very closely relate to. I would highly, highly, highly encourage everyone to watch it, though I will, like, it is very much an R-rated movie. Just going into it, no, there is probably like the worst language in a movie I've ever seen, but it's worth it. It's worth it because I think it's just a really important movie. Question from Matt. He said, it seems like working for Gary Vee is the dream job. He watched the video I made while I was leaving, but since then he asked, have I doubted my decision at all? He said he left a dream job to pursue something else and felt like he made some regrets. No. So even though on paper, you know, Vayner was a dream job and it was an amazing job and I regret absolutely none of the time I spent there, I am fully and 100% aware and at peace with my decision that I had reached a glass ceiling at Vayner for what I was doing at that moment. And that's not to say, you know, I'm never going to say I will not go work with Vayner again in some capacity, but I 100% had hit a wall in growth at Vayner. And that was the reason that I was okay with leaving. There was zero hard feelings towards Gary or D-Rock. I mean, anyone that I worked with, I love all of them to death and they are still some of my best friends. But it was, you know, Vayner for me was not the most healthy place to be. And I needed, and I just recognized that, like I needed to go try other things. Vayner was my first real job. And even though it was awesome, I am 100% okay with my decision that I left. And there has not been a single moment that I have regretted not being at Vayner outside of the fact that I just miss my friends. So, you know, I work pretty much solo 24/7 now, which is tough because, you know, on these weeks where I'm, you know, super heads down on an edit, I might like not see any other humans for like a couple days at a time, which that is sort of like mentally straining on itself. But other than that, I'm totally at peace with my decision to have left. All right, so it's been a minute. We're closing in, I think, an hour that I've been answering questions. So I'm going to go a little bit rapid fire. I'm not going to be so long-winded for these next few and just try and crank through them pretty quickly. What was my transition like from Florida to city life in New York? It was super weird, and I was 1,000% out of my comfort zone, but it also has made it to where I'm hyper-comfortable in very uncomfortable situations these days. It's very true what they say, like if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. And so even though it was, you know, a complete and utter culture shock from growing up in a very, you know, just like average middle class community in Florida to going into a place where, you know, New York was the first time I had experienced and seen, you know, like things like poverty, and I had never experienced homelessness on this level and things like that. That was a little bit of a culture shock, but it was a very important experience for me to go through. A question from Chef Lizette, what is my favorite app to create content for Instagram? I mean, there's like a million apps that are awesome. I would say my favorite app for like mobile photo editing is VSCO and Lightroom Mobile. Those are both awesome. And those are sort of my primary tools that I use for mobile content creation. But that being said, I would say 80 to 90% of the things I'm putting out have been edited on a desktop computer and then moved over to my phone. Question from Infrared Design, what's a good beginner podcast setup look like? The thing that's awesome is podcasting is such a lightweight lift. There is an amazing tool called Zencastr. It's what I use whenever I do mobile podcast recordings. And literally it is a free app that you can use on your web browser. You can use a pair of headphones that have a microphone built into it. And then in 30 seconds, you are set up to do a podcast. Don't let the friction of creating a podcast get in the way. There's also apps like Anchor, which is what I use to publish this podcast. And you literally, all you have to do is talk to your phone and it makes a podcast and distributes it for you. It's the best thing ever. Podcasting is literally one of the most low friction mediums to putting out content that I've ever experienced. So don't stress too much over your gear and your setup. But if you must know, I have two Audio Technica. I'm going to look at the model name. I personally use an Audio Technica AR2000 mic, I believe. It's nothing crazy. I think it's like $60 on Amazon or B&H. I have two of them, and I record into Adobe Audition. It's personally what I do, but you by no means have to go that route if that's not what does it for you. Question from E. 12E cover, how do you build up a consistent client base? And that really just comes for doing consistent work and making sure that you're pursuing the work you really want to do. And also use clients to get other clients. I think, one of the easiest things to do is if you're in looking, you know, if you're in need of other clients, ask your current clients if they have any of their friends that may potentially need extra work. I think that's a really easy way. The thing I would say, you know, don't be fearful of, and, you know, take this with a grain of salt, because there's only been a few times in my life where I've technically been like a full-time freelancer, and those were a long time ago. But the thing with freelance is it's sort of a roller coaster. Like, clients are going to come and they're going to go. And, you know, if you're signing up for the world of freelance, you know, you shouldn't be too attached to consistency. If you want consistency, I would say go get a job. You have to be really okay with the roller coaster effect of, you know, freelance, and that clients are going to come and they're going to go, and you just have to keep sort of rolling with the punches. Last question from Sid, and he said, what's the biggest secret no one talks about traveling solo, good and bad? So if you guys follow me, you know, like I'm on the road a good bit, especially whenever I was filming for Gary, I was traveling all the time. And even though I was with Gary, a lot of times I was pretty solo unless we were actually filming the episode. The biggest thing I would say is take advantage of traveling in any time, especially solo. And, you know, anytime we got to a new country or a new place, I immediately try and get out of my hotel room. It's super easy for me to default into just like wanting to load up Netflix or, you know, looking at the laundry list of editing work that has to get done. And I sort of want to just like sit down in the hotel room and start grinding away. I'm trying to constantly push myself to get out of my comfort zone and go experience new things when I'm on the road, because the world is just a really dope place and I want to see as much of it as I possibly can. Okay, I think we're good. I think I got through a large majority of these questions. Again, if I didn't answer your question or you have a new question that you would like to add in, feel free to email me at workwithbabin@gmail.com and or DM me on the Instagrams at Babin. I will do my best to get to them and answer them as soon as I can. Also, I'm super stoked to announce, finally, it took a while, but we are now on Apple Podcasts. And so if you guys would go leave a review on Apple Podcasts for Tuesday Morning Coffee, that would go a very, very long way. I got one 5-star review on there. I need at least 10 coming out of this episode. It would mean so much to me if you guys would go drop a review. And after you drop the review on Apple Podcasts, go DM me and I'm going to do something special for all you guys that leave 5-star reviews, because it would mean the world to me. But that's it for me. I hope you guys have an amazing rest of your Tuesday and amazing rest of the week. Go have some coffee on this Tuesday morning, and I will talk to you guys next week.